This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour two coming up. Thanks for joining us as we continue along on the Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. All right, so we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. We're working on getting somebody for Villanova. We might have somebody this hour to join us to talk about Villanova as we get a Final Four preview. Look, I know just before the break, I kind of was saying, hey, look, Villanova, Kansas is kind of the appetizer to the main event. Yeah, and it kind of is, because Duke, North Carolina is one of the best rivalries in sports, and it's Coach K's final game. And, man, the pressure of them losing to North Carolina, if that should happen, to end Coach K's, I mean, it's just the storylines write themselves. But the Kansas-Villanova game should be a rather interesting one from a Jay Wright perspective. He's lost his guard, Justin Moore, and yet there is going to be some ways he can get around that. But the one thing that I think Villanova could struggle with is that Kansas is a really quick basketball team. And Jay Wright, you know, loves his team, but one of the things that he talked about was it's something we cannot replicate. We cannot replicate their speed. So don't sleep on Kansas Villanova in the first one, just to get to the sort of story-riddled game between North Carolina and Duke. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of attention on Coach Mike Krzyzewski's final run, and rightfully so. 13 Final Fours, and Duke being the one of the storied programs in college basketball because of him. But over the last couple of years, Villanova has won national championships, and Jay Wright could possibly be tough without Moore, but he could win yet another one in this window of time that he's got Villanova playing at its best basketball with guys coming into that program and helping it succeed. But then there's Bill Self at Kansas, and I don't think a lot of people have been following Kansas enough. Kansas is one of those programs where they're just good all the time, so you just go, oh, ho-hum, here's Kansas once again, you know, leading the Big 12 and being on top of the rankings and all of those things that we say about Kansas. But that's going to be a good game, and I know I get it if you want to skip to the end and go right to Duke, North Carolina, but don't sleep on Villanova, Kansas as a starter for the Final Four. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's now time for the good, the bad, and the dumb. It is the Wednesday edition. And I'm really excited for this one. All right, let's get the good of the day.
Good of the day's got to go to Tsuyoshi Shinjo, a.k.a. Big Boss. That's the name that I don't know if he gave himself. And if he gave it to himself, God bless him, because he deserves every last letter of it.
No doubt.
He's the manager of Japan's Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters, which, by the way, great name. Ham Fighters.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't know if this is a thing in Japan, but the manager, he made a dramatic entrance. And when I say dramatic, it is over the top. Nothing compares to it. I mean, not even a WWE entrance. He comes out, looks like the bullpen area, music a blaring, smoke everywhere, lighting is perfect, jumps on what I can only describe as a hover bike.
Yes! When I saw this video,
hover
I asked
bike.
You, what is this?
Flies around the dome stadium for about 30 seconds and then lands it. And that's
it. This is a drone, but it is big enough to have a bike that he can be on top of it, and then he's flying on it.
Yes.
Okay. So what do we make of this?
I mean, you said it best. We were talking about it during the break. Game changer.
Game changer.
I think that's the best way to describe it.
So you and I one time a while ago talked about flying cars.
Yes.
And I brought up a clip of Neil deGrasse Tyson, I think he was on Joe Rogan, who said that
we have them now. They're called helicopters. And Joe Rogan kind of went, oh, really? Like, we're not going to have flying cars? Like, because DeGrasse Tyson was talking about the physics, and he said the amount of force that you needed, that was necessary to lift a car up and fly it, is so great. And it's just, it would be so noisy and take up so much power, it's not even worth it. But this, to me, changes that game.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be your Dodge Journey that gets wings and flies. It could just be a one-passenger, two-passenger drone bike that you use to fly over the traffic.
I mean, this looks big enough for someone to sit on the back, right?
Right. So, but I think you and I were kind of discussing this in a way like saying, look, okay, so when I'm a kid, my parents got me a Commodore 64. I'm a kid of the 80s.
Yeah.
I'm a Commodore 64. It used BASIC, right? It was just simple. But one of the things it did for me and my brother was it made us familiar enough with the computers so that they weren't scary when we got, like, to school, like the high school, when computers started to become more of a reality. By the way, I'm old enough to remember when my high school and the teacher that was in charge of the computers, Mr. Bickford, he treated those computers like they were Fabergé eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had to be certified to use them. Like, you couldn't just let any old schlub student get behind the wheel of those contraptions, right? Now, I carry a phone that holds every piece of information that has ever been conceived by humankind.
I remember, you know, going to a computer lab and waiting because there was only, like, three.
Exactly, exactly. So within our relatively short amount of time, we went from a computer that if you could play tic-tac-toe on it was amazing to now accessing the world information at your fingertips. And we complain that it's too slow.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You remember getting on the internet back in the day?
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, and you just waited and waited and you were fine with it.
Somebody was on the phone and you're like, get off the phone.
Yeah. Now, if it's not there, if you can't get to a page within a nanosecond, you almost want to smash the computer.
Yeah. Louis C.K. tells a joke about being on a plane and goes, the plane was so excited that it had Wi-Fi. He goes, I'm on the plane the first time Wi-Fi was available in an airplane, and they were so excited about it. And they said, we can use the in-flight Wi-Fi. He goes, then later on, it shut down. It didn't quite work. And he goes, the guy next to me goes, this is BS. And he goes, you just found this technology, like, just now, and you're already complaining. That's how we've grown accustomed. So back to this flying drone bike thing. Yeah, it doesn't go very fast.
No.
And it looks kind of primitive in what it is. But this is the catalyst for 10 years from now.
20 years from now.
20 years from now. They're everywhere, and they go faster, and they're safer, and we're flying all over the place in these things.
I mean, I brought this up. I mean, when the first car came out, think all the way back like to 1910s.
Right.
It never even dawned on them that this thing could go 30 miles per hour.
Sure.
And now we have cars that are like, oh, you know, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds.
You're right. I mean, bring like a Lamborghini back in time to like 1910.
They would think it's a spaceship.
Right? Yeah. What do we talk about like, like my grandmother's generation, right? Your grandmother's generation.
Yeah.
Like they live. My grandmother lived to be 97. She passed away in 2017. There's nobody in the history of the world that lived through a completely crazy technological time.
Yes.
Than people from my grandmother's generation who lived to be near 100.
Yep.
Like, I think about what my grandmother saw when she was 10 compared to what she saw when she was 97. It's insane. You can't put your arms around it. You cannot put your arms around what somebody saw in 1922 to compare it to 2022. It's insane. And no person in the history of the world ever saw that kind of technological growth. So to see a drone bike today, 10 years from now, we'll all have one.
I mean, they're going to say the same thing about us because when we grew up, computers weren't a thing.
Right.
God, I remember, you know.
Never felt like I needed one.
I remember my first video game, Atari 2600.
Yeah.
It was just a joystick and a button. That was it.
It was the greatest thing in the history of mankind.
Yeah, and now I, you know, if I had a hold of a controller, I got like 18 buttons. I don't have enough fingers for all these buttons.
Patton Oswalt said once about the MP3 player. He goes, back in the day, you used to walk around with your Walkman.
Yep.
Right? It used to be cassette. You'd walk around with your Walkman. He goes, now we got MP3 players. And if you were to go back in time and show somebody with a Walkman what that was, they'd say, what is that? He goes, oh, it plays digital music. And he goes, well, how many songs does it hold? Every song that has ever been written in the history of the human race. And he goes, oh, my God, how much does that thing cost? It must be $1,000,000,000. No, we give them away for free. Like, that's how far we've come.
Yeah. How much music hold? All of them.
All of the songs. What do you mean all of the songs? No, I mean, seriously, every song ever.
Yep.
And by the way, they give them away in Cracker Jack boxes. Like, we give them away as door prizes. Like, nobody even knows how they got theirs. They're like, oh, yeah, I must have gotten that at some party. Right? That's how fast it goes. This drone bike is a game changer.
It's what, you know, 30 years from now, we're going to be like, hey, you remember that first time
right?
we saw it?
Remember this show when you're flying around on your drone bike in 5 years? You're like, yeah, Tony and Ron told me about this 5 or 6 years
ago. Went 8 miles per hour.
My stupid neighbor's got a bigger one than I do. I better just get to the dealership.
It's got more trunk space than me.
Yeah, his has got a sunroof. Bragger. Like, remember this program. All right, we went long on the good, but well worth it.
Yeah.
All right, what's the bad of the day, then we'll break, and then we'll do the dumb of the day.
Well, yeah, because the dumb...
Because I can't help myself with that.
No, I'm 100% with you.
I can't help myself.
It's a game changer. I saw Absolutely. That, and I was like, oh, my God, I want one today. I don't care if it only goes 5 miles per hour. I want one. The bad of the day is to all the fans out there that are upset over Eric Church, who's a country artist,
yeah,
canceling his concert in San Antonio this weekend. Do you know why he's doing it?
Why is he doing that?
He is born and raised in North Carolina. He is a Tar
yes.
Heel through and through.
Good for him.
And he canceled his tournament because he will not miss North Carolina Duke. And to all those fans, all I have to say is this. You don't get it.
Too bad. You don't understand.
Don't get it.
You do not understand.
I mean... If this was just a regular season game, yeah, I'd be upset.
It might be the most important. It's the most important game in the rivalry. Might be.
Yeah.
I gotta stop. I've gotta just say what it is without sort of putting like
an
asterisk next to it. Like, maybe the 2001 game was. No, forget it. This is the most important game in the history of that rivalry. It's for everything.
Everything.
Everything. It is to end Coach K's career on a loss to North Carolina. How incredible could that be?
But in the Final Four. That's
in the Final Four.
I mean, you can't ask. If you're a Tar Heel fan, you can't ask for a better outcome.
The T-shirt makers around the country are ready to put the score on a T-shirt, some meme on a T-shirt. Like, they're jumping at the opportunity to cash in on this game. Every North Carolina
fan
in the country.
And we kept saying it over and over. Villanova, Kansas, probably going to be a great game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's the undercard.
I told you this story before. I'm going to repeat this story because it's kind of prevalent to this. I have a friend of mine who consults political campaigns. Right. So one of his jobs is he provides you with the banners and the bumper stickers and all that stuff. He markets that. But he also gives political advice. Like, he'll say, you should go here. Your polling is bad here. Give a speech here, whatever. He said he had a candidate one time years and years ago. And he said, listen, you're going to get asked the South Carolina Clemson question in the state of South Carolina. He says, you're going to get asked the question. He goes, don't do the thing where you go, I like them both. Nobody in this state likes them both. Right? John Edwards. You remember John Edwards ran for vice presidential candidate? Was it Al Gore, I think? Or John Kerry? It was John Kerry. He was asked once, Duke or North Carolina? He's from North Carolina. He said, well, I like them both. And they said this was a... Like, people could vote for you if you are a fan of the team they don't like. Because... You know, they go, all right, well, I can't, you know.
At least you're honest.
At least you're honest. But that's the key. At least you're honest. Like, if I'm a Duke fan, I could vote for a politician that shares my values if he roots for North Carolina, because I get it. Not everybody likes Duke. Not everybody likes North Carolina.
Yeah.
I get it. And we can agree to disagree in our sports team. But if you come at me with, I like both Duke and North Carolina, I'm going to think you're from Michigan. Like, what are you, a transplant? Did you just get here 10 minutes ago?
Yeah, like for me.
Like, try that in Alabama. Like, try that. Like, try a politician going, I'm an Auburn fan, but I'm also an Alabama fan. Like, you'd be like, please leave the state. Thank you.
Yeah. Turn in your ID.
You're not really from here. You have no sense of what this is. You do not know what this is.
And you got to be careful, because if you say that, you're probably going to have jury duty every single week for the rest of your life.
Exactly, right? Exactly. So it's better to take a side. It is better to say, sorry, this is the side I'm on, rather than I like both. Ugh, like both. So the thing about that rivalry is, yes, if you are in that, if you are from that state, if you were raised in that environment, Duke, North Carolina, whatever you're doing Saturday night, you got to stop. If
Doesn't
you were
matter.
Planning on getting married, reschedule the event or have it in the morning. Tell everybody that's coming. Yeah, it was going to be a nighttime dinner thing. Now it's a breakfast buffet at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
We're getting this thing over with as quickly as possible.
Or if, you know, have it in the afternoon and say, guys, you know, the typical reception, you're not going to have. We're wheeling in TVs.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Like, we're not missing this for any reason
whatsoever.
And we
will separate this crowd like it's the bride and groom's families.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yes, those of you who are upset about
San Antonio,
this,
sorry.
San Antonio, sorry, but this really is a big deal. All right, we'll have the dumb coming up next, and then we may be talking some Villanova basketball as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, we'll get to the dumb in just a minute as we wrap up that segment. Michael on Twitter. Tony, when your grandmother was a child, a man used to bring a block of ice with no elevator up to your apartment through your refrigerator. Yes, she's seen some technological changes. Yeah, and now,
exactly.
Now I have a device that makes sonic chewable ice in my garage. Because I just don't like the regular blocks of ice. They're just too
hard. Well, I complain when the ice maker in my refrigerator is slow.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, forgetting that I used to have to fill ice trays.
Yeah.
And wait for them to freeze.
What a wild, I'm really curious, like, if I live to be 95, and I hope I do, but if I live to be 95, will I experience the same? I would think I would. Right?
I think we will. I mean, yes, like, you know, I agree that, you know, like, you know, our grandparents saw technological advances unfathomable.
Like, some of them didn't see flight and then saw the moon landing.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, some people, not necessarily my grandmother, but some people saw no flying to landing on the moon.
I think for us, the fact that, you know, we used to have a Walkman and then we had you know, we used to be able to play CDs, a portable CD player in our hands that would constantly skip.
Right.
Right?
All the time.
And don't forget, it had that bass boost button.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, or just wireless headphones. I mean, we had wired headphones that if it bent just wrong, you had to throw them away.
So if I lived to be, like, I was born in the early 70s. So if I lived to be in the, like, 2060, like, what would it be like?
I'm curious too.
In 2060, where I go, oh my God, when I was a kid, it was just ridiculous. Like, I don't know what I could say, because somebody who's 100 years old, like back in 2000, could be like, yeah, I had no television and now I have high definition television.
Right.
Will I experience better things that I've known my whole life, or will I experience things I absolutely can't imagine existing? Because that's that generation. There were some people who thought man flying was ridiculous. And then next thing you know, they're in their old age and they're like, we landed on the moon. Like, we took a rocket ship to the moon. Like, will I just see things more advanced, or will I wake up and go, we have technology I couldn't even fathom? Or will I just see better things, better cars, better computers, better phones, better TVs, you know what I mean? rather than something completely new. Like, take a 100-year-old person today, and if you went back in time to when they were a kid and showed them a TV back in 1922, they'd be like, what the heck is this? But 15 years from now, 20 years from now, if you take that same 100-year-old guy 15 years from now and go back, they go, oh, that's just a better version of what I remember as a child. When I was a kid, it was bigger. It was like black and white, very limited channels. It was kind of squirrely. You've obviously improved that over 100 years. It's an interesting philosophical conversation. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is actually a good dumb of the day.
Okay.
Okay, because I'm really excited for this. Yeah, I'm really excited for this. The NFL has agreed to allow two teams to have their probably the greatest throwback jerseys ever.
Which are?
The Eagles will be bringing back their Kelly Green jerseys.
I like those. I really like those.
And the Buccaneers are bringing back the creamsicle.
Wow.
Why it's dumb? We won't see it until 2023.
Why?
I don't know. I guess.
Why can't they figure out the throwback helmet thing?
Here's my issue, right? And if you're Tampa, I would be livid and say, can we do it now?
Well, let's hold the roll on Tampa for a second. There is, other than Doug Williams, there's no good memory they've ever had in those uniforms.
Right.
That uniform is synonymous with some of the worst professional football that has ever been played in the history of the league.
Yes.
Now, it looks good. It's got a cool color, and it's nostalgic. But remember, nostalgia is supposed to give you a feeling of something good. Like, when you eat something, I remember my mother's meatloaf. It was the best thing I ever ate when I was a kid. You don't go, oh, this reminds me of my mother's meatloaf, which was god-awful, and we dreaded it every time she made it. That's not nostalgic. When you see if you've lived in Tampa for 50 years and you see those creamsicle Buccaneer uniforms, don't you think, ugh, 2-14. John McKay saying he was for the execution of the team.
Yeah.
Like,
but
ugh.
From a sales standpoint, can you imagine having a Brady 12 creamsicle jersey?
Absolutely. I love it. I mean,
but if you wait till 2023, you might miss it.
You and I argued once that the Tennessee Titans should allow the Texans,
the Oilers,
to have a throwback Oiler jerseys for players like J.J. Watt back in the day. If you're a lifelong Houstonian and you've lived there generations and you grew up loving Bum Phillips, Earl Campbell, Dan Pastorini, and those Oilers, and J.J. Watt is playing in Houston, and you could get a hold of a Oilers J.J. Watt jersey, they would be gobbled up in 10 seconds.
Let's face it. Titans are never going to have that as a throwback jersey.
Absolutely never.
They can't.
Never.
If they ever have that plan, it will. I mean, Houston might invade. I'm not 100% sure. Don't know. War politics in between states, but that could be a catalyst for one.
Absolutely, they never will. That would be like if the Baltimore Ravens honored like Brian Sipe.
Yeah.
And Greg Pruitt.
Jim Brown.
Like, yeah. You know what? You guys look like us, but we're really the Browns. Like Cleveland would go, no. Even though this is a worthless expansion team that has never given us any joy whatsoever, this is still our Browns.
That's ours.
Right? Yeah, no kidding.
That's why it's dumb.
I think the Buccaneers, the thing that bothered me about the changeover for the Bucs was I think that swashbuckling Buccaneer logo of the Bucs back in the day was really gorgeous. It was a really beautiful logo that they just flushed down the toilet. And I think that's too bad. But the creamsicle stuff it's a good color combo, man. I always liked it.
It is. I mean, and that helmet, you can just picture. I can't wait to see it. I just wish it could be this season.
Yeah, I want it this season.
I'm sure they can get a jersey manufacturer to pop those puppies out quickly.
You know, I used to like it when Brady was in the old Minuteman red jersey Minuteman helmet back in the when they actually did do this without any fear of like the helmet not being correct. I just can't believe that's the excuse. That doesn't make any sense.
And the Kelly Green is nice too.
Kelly Green is great. That's a good one. That's a really, really good one. Yeah, good, good. All right, we'll talk Villanova basketball. Well, how do they stack up against Kansas, especially without Justin Moore? That is coming up next as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing to give you insight on teams that are heading to the Final Four. Villanova will take on Kansas in the first semifinal game. Joe Giuliano joins us. Recently retired from the Philadelphia Inquirer, still follows Villanova pretty intently. Congratulations on the retirement, Joe. Appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks. Great to be with you.
So let's talk about this Villanova team, and right off the bat, Justin Moore. How does that change the outlook of this game, and how does it change the way Villanova plays?
Well, it changes it significantly. Justin Moore is kind of like the Villanova's answer to the Swiss Army knife. I mean, he's a great outside shooter. He can get to the basket. He can create his own shot. He can defend the 1-5 on the opponent's side. He just does everything. In fact, he led the team in minutes played. It's going to be a significant change. Jay Wright was saying on Monday he's glad that they have a week to prepare for Kansas because it's going to be there's going to be some changes to the way the Wildcats play. As a point of reference, Justin Moore missed one game during the season with a sprained ankle, and Villanova ended up beating Connecticut at home, but it's always a tough sledding when you lose one of your best players, and we'll see how the bench can perform. Villanova has not really counted very much on its bench. They've been going pretty much with a six-man rotation with one or two players maybe playing 5 to 10 minutes, but that'll all be changed on Saturday. We'll have to see how it works out.
In terms of what Villanova's strength is, and every team is going to come in with something, what has been Villanova's strength entering this Final Four?
Well, it's interesting. They've always played decent defense. It's usually the offense that's helped carry them, and the defense has been kind of like a sidelight. But I think in this tournament, and I'm counting the three games of the Big East tournament and the four games they've played in the NCAA so far, it's been defense. I mean, their defense has been really strong. Really suffocating. They've had some fortune in that, teams have missed shots they usually make, like Houston the other night. They couldn't hit a three to save their lives. But, there have been some bad shooting nights by their opponents. But, you have to give credit to the Villanova defense. They've really tightened up. They've been averaging. I didn't really see the numbers for it, but they gave up only 60 to Delaware. They gave up only 61 to Ohio State. They gave up 44 to Houston the other night. So the defense has really stood strongly for them.
There's one thing that's been being said about this team is that of all the teams in the Final Four, this is the team, and they showed it in the game against Houston, is that they can win a game that's in the 90s, 80s, 70s, but they can also win the game in the 50s. Do they get to play a lot of games that are sort of these sort of slugfest contests?
Well, the one slugfest that comes to mind for me was the game they played at Providence, the showdown of the two best teams in the Big East, and they played up at Providence. The crowd was crazy, but the final score was something like 88-86. So that was that's really the only game that I can remember all season that they've really gone toe to toe offensively with an opponent. They usually like to keep games around 70, maybe 75. But this game at Providence was really the best game I'd seen all year, really. Just a magnificent display of shooting. And the defense wasn't terrible, but the teams, both players on both sides made lots of plays.
Colin Gillespie is one of those players where I go, boy, I feel like he's been there forever. But nevertheless, what is he? How would you define what he does for Villanova? How much of a game changer is he when he's on the court for the Wildcats?
Well, nobody knows more about the Villanova system, the Villanova way, the Villanova offense. I think Colin Gillespie might know it better than Jay Wright by this time. Jay was really pleased to hear that Colin and Jermaine Samuels, is a guy who came in the same year as he did, 2017-18, that they were going to play an extra year. But for Colin, I mean, he is a leader. I mean, he is a guy. He's the guy that makes the team go. He's really a coach on the floor. I mean, these are all cliches, I know, but he really is a coach on the floor. The best example I can think of with Colin and how he how he helps the Villanova cause was in the first Big East tournament game, Villanova trailed St. John's by something like 17 points. And during a timeout, Jay took Calvin Gillespie aside. He says, you better start leading your effing team was the message I heard in the huddle. And I think, you know, since that time, obviously Villanova's had a lot of success. They ended up beating St. John's and beating Creighton beating Connecticut and Creighton in very close games. And it's just continued on into the tournament. But with, just having him on the floor gives Villanova a significant advantage.
Villanova is the best free throw shooting team in the country, but sometimes it doesn't help you if you can't get to the line. Are they capable? Do they have an offense that gets those guys to the line a lot?
Well, it's been tough. During the guts of a game, the free throw attempts are kind of like 10, 12 a game. But obviously, if they have the lead in the last, couple of minutes, the teams have to foul them and they end up, hitting their free throws. So obviously that's a benefit, helping you put the game away like that. There's been games this year where, maybe they might have missed a free throw. The game at UConn is a prime example. They had a 6-point lead with a minute to go, and Caleb Daniels had a 1-1 to, more or less ice the game. He missed the front end, and UConn ended up winning the game. So, there are times when everybody misses a free throw every once in a while. So, but it's obviously a tremendous advantage to have a team that is capable. I mean, of the five starters they'll put on the floor Saturday, four of them shoot better than 80% from the line.
What about tempo? That's the one thing about Kansas that people are saying, look, that's a very quick team. They like to play a little bit faster. Does Villanova play fast? Can they play fast?
Well, they can, but against a team with the firepower of Kansas, I would venture to say they won't.
Yeah.
Villanova all season has been in the lower, 20 or 25 in the KenPom offensive efficiency ratings. And when you consider there's 350-some schools, that's a pretty low standing, but it's the way they play. It's the way they want to play, and they'll keep working the ball around for good shots. If they see a good shot early, they might take it. But most of the time, they let the shot clock bleed down to 10 seconds or less before pulling the trigger. And I would venture to say they would do the same thing against Kansas. Now, in transition, they're not. In a transition situation where it might be 2-on-1, they might take that advantage, but anything less would be something where they just walk it down, set it up in the half court, and see what happens.
Joe Giuliano joins us talking Villanova again, from formerly of the Philadelphia Inquirer. I got to ask you this, and it's more big picture than anything else, because I do like to sort of look at a larger picture. And tell me about Villanova in the Philadelphia area. I live in Nashville. Vanderbilt's a big deal, but it's only a big deal to people that sort of like them. Tennessee really rules the roost here. What's Villanova's presence in the Philadelphia college scene? Is it a popular team, but only popular amongst people who went there? How big is Villanova in that market?
Well, we have the Big Five in Philadelphia, plus another Division I team in Drexel, the City Six, we like to call it. But Villanova, when they were making the run in 2016, there were a lot of happy Villanova fans. And if you looked at the rest of the fan base, it was like, they're playing well, good for Big Five. But, we still like our teams. We don't really like Villanova that much. But you win in 2016, you win in 2018. Now you have a run in 2022. And, I think more and more people are grudgingly coming around to Villanova's side. It helps that Jay Wright handles himself with a lot of class and dignity. I mean, he talks to everybody. He doesn't get in your face. He's on the sidelines, he's a maniac, but you get him after or before a game, and he's a gentleman. He's very good with the media, very good with Villanova alums, and even people walking up to him on the street. So I think that's turned Villanova I think it's turned the fans in favor of Villanova more than pulled back. But I do have a neighbor as a St. John's fan or a St. Joe's fan who, don't ask him about Villanova.
It's a premier national championship team in the Big East. That's a pretty high level in college basketball. Has Jay Wright's name ever been bantied about in the years it has been there for other gigs, NBA gigs, anything like that?
Oh yeah, the NBA is always after him after the 2016 championship.
Sure.
It's always been kind of like a thing. Like if you know, as soon as he's cutting the nets down, the New York Knicks are on the phone saying, "Hey, be our coach, please. We'll give you, you know, like in 2016, we'll give you $6 million. After 2018, we'll give you $10 million." And Jay's like, "No, sorry, I like it too much here." I mean, he's been at Villanova now 21 years. He's
right.
Just turned 60. Last Christmas Eve. I mean, he likes what he's doing. Obviously, he's getting paid pretty well for it. And, you know, he doesn't show any signs of wanting to go anywhere else, even though there have been overtures. I mean, you know, 2009, they made the Final Four, and, you know, Kentucky was calling. But, hey, he stuck to his guns, and he stuck around. And, you know, I think he likes life right where he is.
I know there's going to be a lot of attention on Duke and North Carolina, obviously, with Coach K, but I've watched this Villanova team, and I like them. I'm going to be really interested in what they do against Kansas. Joe, thank you so much. I really do appreciate your time this morning. Thanks again.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a good day.
You got Joe Giuliano again, retired out of the Philadelphia Inquirer, but still follows Villanova very, very closely. I've always liked Jay Wright. I agree. Everybody that I've ever talked to that has covered college basketball on a regular basis that has dealt with Jay Wright says the same thing that Joe just said. Gentleman, talks you, looks you, doesn't blow you off, and, you know, like really respects the coverage that you're giving the program. But it is interesting, like Mike Krzyzewski at Duke, when we talk about him, of course, when you have success on the college level, it doesn't matter where you are, of course the big, you know, schools will come calling. I mean, look what happened to Brad Stevens. You get two Final Four runs, national championship appearance with Butler, and next thing you know, you're the head coach of the Boston Celtics. They do come calling. And I've always been curious, on the college scene, though, he'd be hard-pressed. Yeah, Kentucky, UCLA, right? Think of some of these programs, Indiana. They're a little bit more blue-blood than Villanova. But you're at a good school that pays you well. You're in the Philadelphia market. You're in the Big East, which, again, it may not be the Big East of John Thompson and Jimmy Boeheim and Raleigh Massimino, but it's the Big East nonetheless. You're always in contention for a national title. No one scoffs at the idea of you of putting together a team that could win the national title. It's been expected that you do that. There really doesn't seem to be any other mountain in college basketball to climb than that's, you know, just stay where you're at. 21 years he's going on at Villanova. The NBA is a different deal. I know some Billy Donovan eventually could not resist the urge to get to that level, right? Some college coaches have done that. You know, John Calipari went to the NBA, realized, not for me, went back to the college game, and has been lured ever since by teams that are willing to break the bank for him. And like he said, the Knicks have always been calling on Jay Wright. But as far as the you know, going to another college, I just can't find a better situation for him. Like, what other better situation than Villanova and where he's at right now? Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument on a few, but not a lot. And even the ones that you would say come with a downside. I mean, Kentucky's a great job, but it's a very, very demanding fan base, right? UCLA is UCLA, but it ain't the UCLA of old, right? And Villanova is, he just has that team always in contention and always in the top 25 and always in a chance to win a national title. All right, Tony D, Ron Culver, it's Wake Up Call as we continue on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Joe Giuliano, thanks to him from the Philadelphia Choir. I like the way you said it right before. He's like, he recently retired. Good for you. Good for you.
He told me right before. He said, I should have told you earlier. And I'm like,
that's all right.
Let me know. We're fine.
He was really good.
Yeah. You could tell that he was the beat writer for that team for years.
Yep, exactly. What a crazy week we're going to have next week. I can't wait. By the way, programming note, I'm going to have tomorrow off. Got to go to the early morning doctor's appointment. I shouldn't say early morning. It's a standard early morning doctor's appointment, but it's up in Nashville, and it takes 5.5 years
to get
from my house to Nashville.
Yeah.
Like, it's seriously, you're better off getting there by wagon train.
You told me you're leaving tonight.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad I don't have to commute there on a regular basis, because I have a cousin, and he's like, it drives me insane. He has to get up early in the morning to get to his office early, because he will sit in traffic if he doesn't. He just, it's insane. And I know every city, it's every city says, we have the worst traffic in America. I believe it. Denver wasn't exactly a picnic.
Yep.
You know, I get it. But Houston, it doesn't change the fact that in Nashville, it's horrific. It's horrific. So, again, we're going to be gathering the wagon and cookie and grab a bunch of supplies and trek our way up with our oxen.
Overnight bag, or two nights?
Yeah, overnight bag all the way to Nashville tomorrow for a quick doctor checkup. So I'm off tomorrow, but I'll be back on Friday.
So basically, you're going to spend 7 hours in the car for a 10-minute visit.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what stinks? Like, when you do a morning show on radio and you have the day off, you're supposed to be able to, oh, well, I'll get a little bit of sleep.
Yes.
I got to get up at the crack of dawn anyway to get up. It's like, all right. So I get like an extra 45 minutes before I have to get up and get ready to go to this thing. So, but the good news is afterwards I can go get a breakfast sandwich or something when it's all said and done.
How about a full breakfast?
I know. We probably should just go to breakfast.
Yeah.
Right? Just go eat breakfast.
Find some little place, because, I mean, if not, you're sitting in traffic on the way back.
Exactly. Really quick, next week, Monday night's basketball game. Tuesday we'll be going over the game. The Masters is going to be going on that week. Opening day in Major League Baseball is on the 7th. A lot of stuff going on next week. I can't wait. It should be a fun week. All right, we continue. Hour number 3 coming up next as we continue with Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.